Welcome to Charity Talks. I'm Brooke Tanefsky, and today I spoke with Marco Kasich, the founder of Fun Life. Fun Life works directly on the ground in the Philippines, where it has developed a proprietary, youth-led, community-first approach to ensuring that all children have an equal opportunity. From education and empowerment to emergency humanitarian programming and peace-building, Fun Life has already helped thousands of children realize their dreams. I really enjoyed speaking with Marco and learning about Fun Life, and I hope you do too. Welcome to Charity Talks. Today I'm speaking with Marco Kasich, the founder of Fun Life. Marco, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Brooke. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So to start, can you tell us about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So originally, I was born in former Yugoslavia, which is now Croatia. And my family moved because of the conflict to London. So I guess from a young age, I felt that I had a slightly different upbringing to some of my peers. And I think before starting Fund Life, I had no idea that I wanted to get into the NGO sector. I never really had a network of anyone working in this industry. But what I knew is that I didn't identify with corporate London, where I was working in finance for about 6 to 12 months. So the journey really started with making a conscious decision to explore other alternatives. I just felt that the business as usual mantra, which I was taught when I started the work, especially on the global backdrop of the economic crisis, it was 2009, it just didn't resonate with me. I just felt a huge disconnect, and I felt this sort of, dishonesty, which I guess I was quite naive. I felt that there would be more responsibility from business. At least that was what was being communicated to the public. But when you're behind the curtain, you unfortunately see that, you know, it's all about profit maximization. And so really the journey started with coming to that conclusion that I wanted to pursue something that I felt had more purpose to me.
Yeah, and it sounds like even though you obviously transitioned to something very different, I'm sure there's a lot of skills that you were able to use when you came to Fun Life. And so I'd really love to hear more about what Fun Life's mission is and kind of the overall goal.
Absolutely. And yes, one thing that you learn in corporate is that, you know, it teaches you how to drive business, which has been fundamental in obviously starting and then sustaining Fund Life. And just to sort of, before we talk about what Fund Life does, I think the introduction to Fund Life might be relevant in the sense that I moved to the Philippines again to carry on my business career, to work in a startup. And that's the first time I got exposed to this huge inequity, this polarization of opportunity, this polarization of wealth. And it was so highlighted, it was something that I had never experienced growing up in Europe. And so those were the first signs of understanding how the world is sort of, it has opportunities for some, but the overwhelming majority of people, at least what I was seeing in the Philippines, in Manila, there were so many amazing young people who simply were growing up in intergenerational poverty and just deprived of any kind of opportunity to, you know, we're not talking about fulfill their potential. We're talking about simply go to school and stay in school. So the mission of Fund Life, very simply, is to give equitable opportunity to every boy and girl in the Philippines, regardless of their economic background. And we do this primarily through purposeful play, experiential learning, and connection with local role models and mentors. That's fundamentally why we started, and we still keep that mission.
And it sounds like you've really kind of observed some of the problems and issues in the Philippines. And so I'm just wondering if you could kind of describe the scale of the issue for vulnerable youth and, yeah, what they're really facing in the Philippines.
I will try. It's hard to sort of explain because, of course, I can put figures and the statistics are pretty dire in terms of, at the moment, the national poverty, I think, is around 22-23%, which essentially means 1 in 5 children. And this is sort of extreme poverty, less than $2 a day for the household. But essentially, you have 21 million students who are registered under the public education system. And unfortunately, having worked in many public schools, there is just a very distinct lack of access to quality education. So classes have about 40 or 50 children. Teachers are often asked to do numerous different subjects. And it just means the quality of teaching, the quality of learning for children is obviously not at the standard that they need to excel. So these are some of the challenges in terms of educational, but then you have obviously the economic challenges, the health challenges, you have also the nutrition challenges. So I think, you know, it speaks of many of the poverty factors which young people have to deal with. And our role is really to sort of work with young people and help them with the last step. So we work with the Ministry of Education. And once children are in school, how do you keep them there? Because the dropout rates are between 20 to 30% with adolescent youth. So again, it's how do you take these vulnerable youth and really try and make sure they complete education? Because without education, there's almost no chance for them to enter the formal economy. And again, that's a whole host of potential risk factors, especially for adolescent vulnerable girls, human trafficking, exploitation, all these things which unfortunately come with living in poverty. And if they don't manage to have a safe family environment, because often, again, the challenges are, it's not just sort of the external environment, but internally, sometimes families are so hard up, they sometimes push girls into these very unsavory and dangerous things to help with income making. So, yeah, a host of challenges. But I think one thing, just to finish on a positive, the one thing that we focus on with Fund Life, it's really about understanding and communicating the potential of these young people. Yes, they're vulnerable. Yes, they live in very difficult circumstances, but they have this amazing potential. They have this amazing flair and innocence, which we try and sort of cultivate and help them and you know, just help.
I know you kind of touched upon education and that Fund Life has six overarching programs designed to help young people in the Philippines, including education. But I was wondering if you could also talk about more so the empowerment aspect and the gender equality aspect of what you do.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned just a little bit earlier, the key to our work is really trying to give young people confidence and really not looking at some of the negative aspects that we understand and are documented in terms of the poverty factors. So for us, it's about enabling young people to essentially identify what it is that they want. And so this can be as simple as, you know, wanting to become a nurse or a policeman or a chef, to something obviously more ambitious, a doctor or a lawyer. So while we use sports to work with young people, the goal is really to build and create capacities for young people where they can go into their chosen careers, whatever career that is. And we identify that as access to dignified and safe employment. And so that process begins with access to sport, because often in these communities, they don't have structured sport sessions. They don't have somebody who is teaching them very basic but fun discipline. And with sports, it creates them, you know, this idea of turning up on time, being accountable to your teammates. At the same time, they can very easily see improvements. When they start a new skill, they don't know how to play. They've never, for example, we use soccer, which isn't popular in the Philippines. And so a lot of the young people that we work with, they haven't played the game before. And they're very eager to learn, but at the same time, the improvement curve is very sharp. So they can see within a month, they're improving. And again, we try and educate them to understand in the same way you improve with sports, it's the same with education. When you build up your skills with anything you do in life, it will get you to where you want to go. So that's the first important thing, for them to have this mentality paradigm shift that, you know, life is about consistency. And if they keep on turning up, good things will happen. And then alongside that, our job is to connect them with positive role models. So we have mentors who are working for Fund Life. We team up with the schools, with the colleges, and then we also try and get them in front of young people who have come from the same background, but are now in college or are now in successful careers. Just because, again, Fund Life, I didn't mention, but Fund Life is 100% locally led. So all of our field staff, all of our operations team are from those communities that we work in. And so it's very important to show a successful path for these young people. That I think is the best way to empower them. We don't think telling them how to do it is the key. It's about showing them and giving them evidence. And the best way you can do that is to say, well, here's somebody that was 5 years ago the way you are today. And this is what they did. If you want a similar journey, now you know the steps and there's no excuses, because I think that that's the most important thing. Also, it's for people in general, it's very easy to find excuses. And so our job is to eliminate them and say, well, okay, we've removed all the big obstacles for you. And now it's really up to the individual to try and be accountable to themselves. And that's the agency. And we feel that that's the empowerment piece, because I think as people, we're all accountable to ourselves, and we try and treat these vulnerable young people in the same way that we're often treated.
I think it's so important, that idea of following through and making sure that over the years they're still keeping up great work. And I think, yeah, that's so interesting. And so, you know, we could talk about all, you have so many different amazing programs, but one I guess I was also curious about was the peace building aspect, because I thought that's really interesting as well.
Yeah. And where we work now, so we're primarily located in central Philippines. And so there isn't too much historical conflict, but Fund Life has been working also in the southern part of the Philippines, where you have separatist groups and there was a history of conflict. And again, through sports, we've also done consultancy outside of the Philippines. So in my former country, Yugoslavia, we worked in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And so again, the idea with these programs is, again, you're creating this, you're removing these external separating blocks, which often young people don't understand. And again, through sports, it's the one thing that connects people together. If you look at, you know, I follow some sports, and again, you know, people are not judged on where they're from, what they look like, the color of their skin, their politics, their religion. Once you cross that line, or once you go onto that field, all you're wearing is a uniform or something to identify who your teammate is and who your opponent is. So it's a very simple but powerful message. And again, it's not about just giving them sports. It's about creating a curriculum. It's about putting together some kind of learning package, which we've done through our partners. And so, again, it's really sort of bringing this, sometimes these politics and these very big issues that young people are often thrown into through no choice of their own, and then really just reminding them that at the end of the day, we're all the same. We're one human race. Yes, we might look different, we might speak different, we might believe different things, but fundamentally, we breathe the same air. And I think sometimes it's such a simple but important message, because if we don't address these things from a young age, and unfortunately, I know this all too well, then young people can grow into being resentful of others without any actual sort of, it's just essentially fear. And I think we should be doing more to make young people understand and make their own decisions, which sometimes doesn't happen.
I'm also curious, sort of on the other end, the emergency aspect of your programs and what that looks like.
Right. And so Fund Life was actually started on the back of the world's strongest typhoon. So Typhoon Haiyan, that's really how we started. We had no intention, and I had no intention of starting an NGO, but we just found ourselves in this horrific situation in the Philippines where we wanted to get access to funding for an NGO I was volunteering for. And unfortunately, the NGO was in Manila and there was this super typhoon, Haiyan. And so Fund Life had a meeting with UNICEF, and then UNICEF said, okay, we have this terrible emergency that we're dealing with. we have some potential funding if you can create a program for the victims of the typhoon. And so our first job as an NGO, my first exposure to the NGO sector was responding to the world's biggest emergency. And so we were surrounded by these huge INGOs, government agencies, just huge amounts of investment and donations going into this emergency. And I was completely taken back because I saw so much. I mean, notwithstanding the amazing response, there was so much ineffective use of funding, mismanagement, lack of funding for local organizations. You know, we had local groups who simply couldn't even pay their staff. At the same time, you had incredibly powerful agencies who had 6 or 7 SUVs just parked, and they were paying $2,000 to $3,000 a month just to have these vehicles parked. They weren't being used, and then you're scratching your head wondering who's making these decisions. For $3,000 in the Philippines, you can employ 6 full-time social workers who can go to these children every day and make sure they're okay, they're recovering from post-traumatic stress. So it was this very strange sort of system that I was thrust into. And it made no sense, because these same organizations who were forced to spend this money because they had it, they were going to leave in 6 to 12 months. So, and that's what happened. So now, 10 years after this tragic event, FundLife is the only NGO that is still there that started during the response. And so we just felt, you know, going through this, being part of this, that there was a better way to do emergency response. So now, again, if we're doing our own response, we try and do it through the framework of sustainable development. It's not just about, you know, survival. It's about creating opportunities and connections with communities to know that there is going to be a long-term component, or at least you're factoring it in. And often with emergency, and I've spoken to many colleagues, it's really, okay, we have 6 months. This is our mandate. We just have to do everything we can within these 6 months. And then they leave, and the vacuum is huge that they leave behind. So this is the main thing why we've tried to bridge the gap between, you know, emergency response to long-term sustainable development, which I think sometimes gets lost, at least in the experience that we've had.
I think it is so important to know that, you know, the different ways that organizations and nonprofits can use their resources and time, and there really is such a difference, and that sustainability aspect is just so important. So I think that's very commendable. And so I guess I'm also curious, you know, really seeing the impact of what this looks like and what your work is. And so I just was wondering if you have any different ways of qualifying or quantifying the impact that FundLife has had.
We do, and obviously there's amazing anecdotal stories of individual success. So some of our players that started with us as participants in 2013, 2014, they're now working as mentors, they're now working as FundLife staff. Some of them have obviously gone on to graduation and successful, dignified work. And in terms of sort of the overall metrics, we have a partnership with the Ministry of Education, and the latest study that we have, or the latest impact report, was published before COVID, but we don't have data, unfortunately, after, just because of the huge disruption. But essentially, what FundLife was able to do in the 4 schools that we were operating in, they had the average dropout rate of 21% for male students, 14% for female students. And all of the pupils that were under our program, it went down to less than 1%.
Wow.
So effectively, we were able, at least with the segment that we were working with, to completely remove dropout rates from that community. And we specifically asked for the most vulnerable young people, the ones who are on the verge of dropping out, because those are the at-risk youth that we wanted to work with. And again, it's about creating connection with the parents. It's not just the students, it's also the teachers, and creating this enabling environment where children actually feel as if their education matters. And again, just when you're dealing in these communities, sometimes it gets overlooked, understandably so. So that was I would say is the sort of biggest impact on education. And again, we have other sort of smaller programs with adolescent vulnerable young women who have gone on again from no income to generating income, part-time or full-time work within 6 months. The data, I don't have all the data because this was a program in response to the COVID-19 emergency. So the program is still ongoing. But yeah, I think that's the most, I think, satisfying thing, that we can see the transformative change in these young people's lives, whether it's children at school, whether it's adolescents who are trying to embark on careers. So the impact has thankfully been there, and we're very grateful that our donors have also been with us, allowing us to, you know, try some different projects and work on different groups depending on the challenges and the needs.
And you mentioned a bit how you also see not only the overall statistics, but also the individual level. And so I'd love to hear if you have any, I'm sure you have a lot, but stories of seeing Fun Life's impact on either like a particular person or community at large.
Yeah, we really have. I think that the biggest sort of example is we have two. We have one of our initially started as one of our players, Ruben, and then he's now, what are we now, 7 or 8 years on since he started. He graduated the FFLA program, our flagship education program. He was selected to go to the US to be sort of an ambassador for the Michael Johnson Youth Leadership Program, which he was a famous Olympian athlete. And then he came back, he became a full-time coach, set up his own community in another place. And now he's gone back to, well, complete his own dream. He's now, I think he's joined the Philippine Army, which was always a big dream for him. But the interesting thing about Ruben and his background is he had 10 siblings, so he was the 11th sibling, and he was the first one to complete education. He was the first one to go to college. Obviously, he was the first one to leave the Philippines. So again, he's completely changed the dynamic and the trajectory of his own sort of family, and he's paved the way, because in his community, we share his story all the time where we work. So he's just a really good example of, it's not just changing the life of one person, but it's actually changing sort of the possibility of everyone that is connected to that young person, which I think is incredibly powerful if you want to create these, you know, systematic and progressive change.
Yeah, and seeing how large of an impact Fun Life has had, I have to ask how those who want to help can best do so.
I mean, I always say, if people want to help, the best advice I can say is find your own local community in terms of sort of, so if you do feel there are some challenges or you want to get involved, we often say, and I firmly believe, help the community that you're closest to, because that's where you can make the most impact. If people are interested specifically in what Fund Life does, or the Philippines, or they have some connections there, we're very easy to find, fundlife.org. You can find us on, you know, the normal socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And just to say that part of our programming does involve international volunteers. Sometimes they become mentors to the coaches that we have, to the youth leaders that we have. And we're very much focused on skills-based volunteering. So we don't have traditional, maybe charity programs. But definitely, if anyone is interested in our work, please reach out. We'd love to hear from people, and we're very responsive to emails and messages. So some people are not, but yeah, we look forward to that, and we're happy to engage with anyone.
Great. And lastly, is there just anything you'd like to add or reiterate that, you know, we might not have covered fully?
No, I mean, thank you for the platform, Brooke. I really appreciate you giving a voice, because again, just to sort of mention, we are, I would say, almost a micro organization. You know, our team is less than 20 full-time staff, and so often it's very difficult for smaller organizations to be heard or to be seen. So just what you're doing is really great, and thank you for the opportunity. And the overall message I would say that I've always been trying to promote is that we should be supporting local organizations, which is somewhat ironic because I'm not from the Philippines, but in that sense, I simply mean organizations led by local people, which FundLife, as I said, I'm not in the field. That's where we've seen the biggest amount of impact, just when you do have local people leading programs, leading organizations, connecting with the communities that they grew up with. So that would be, I think, for me, the most important thing, if I can have one piece of advice.
Definitely. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for being here.
Amazing. Thank you, Brooke.